The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this, the 400th episode of the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, we've only just shaken off the cobwebs after our first episode of the new year last week, but now we have a big milestone to celebrate, a 400 not out. I feel like Brian Lara.
Congratulations on that. What an incredible milestone, really. It's great to be part of it for the 400th episode, and we've got a blockbuster coming up, some great guests, some really big teams to preview, and some stupid comments to make, I'm sure.
Yes, it really gets going for real on this episode, doesn't it? And yeah, apologies for the sneaky cricket reference there at the start. But yes, this is indeed a landmark occasion. So thanks to everyone who has been involved over the years, our dozens of guests, faithful listeners, new and old, and special thanks, of course, to our supporters on Patreon and to all of the J-Talk family, Sam, John, Stuart, and Mike. And on this landmark episode, we're going to be making some landmark announcements about taking the podcast forward that involve our two guests as we begin our club-by-club previews of the new J1 season. While I should also say that a little birdie has told me there might be some new blood joining extra time on a regular basis this year too. But yeah, no time like the present. So let's welcome in our first guest of the year, actually, and of our 400th episode, representing Yokohama F. Marinos. It's Stuart Woodward. Stuart, welcome back to the podcast and happy new season.
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, looking forward to the new season starting. And yeah, really, congratulations on the 400 episodes. To tell the truth, when I first started listening, I didn't know the names of the clubs. I was that new to the J-League, even though I'd been in Japan and had seen football on the TV occasionally whenever it came on. Once I started watching seriously, I really learned a lot from initially from listening to the podcast. So everything I know is I learned it here.
Well, that's very nice of you to say, Stuart. Thank you very much. And yeah, thanks very much for all of your contributions over the years. You've been a frequent guest, and yeah, we've always enjoyed catching up with you. And well, there's no time like the present, Stuart, so we might as well let the listeners in on the first of our big announcements. As I say, we've really enjoyed hearing from you over the years, and the listeners are going to be hearing quite a bit more from you, basically starting from this pre-season.
Yes, so we've been volunteered, co-opted, and quite happily so to contribute to the channel with an episode on a regular basis that will cover the latest news and about Marinos. We have quite a few members in our kind of supporter community, so there's a lot of content that is out there, and hopefully we'll also be able to catch up with some of the other members from other clubs as they visit the stadium and have a quick talk with them outside and capture some of these conversations that we have before the matches, and also just to give our rundown of what's going on and what's happening.
Yes, we can make the announcement now that Stuart and a number of members that he attends games with and has done over the years, they might not even be in the country anymore, will be contributing a club-specific F. Marinos podcast on a regular basis to the channel. And yes, that will be something that we'll be all looking forward to taking in. And yes, Stuart, I mean, your brief is wide open. You can be as biased as you like. It's your podcast to do with as you please. And I don't know, Sam, yeah, we just can't wait to see what the guys are going to come up with.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, actually. It brings a different perspective. You don't necessarily hear, especially on Japanese football, these English fan-specific podcasts. It'll be great to get that sort of insight. It'd be great to get the kind of atmosphere around the stadiums. I'm really interested in those sorts of interviews. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what the guys come up with.
All right, so we don't want to steal too much of your thunder, Stuart, because I imagine that some part of your first podcast or your first couple of podcasts will be dealing with how F. Marinos have gotten on in the winter transfer window. But yes, we're here to preview the upcoming season for your side. So if we look back ever so briefly at 2021, of course, you rose back up the table to second in the J1 table. We had the honour of scoring more goals than the J1 champions, Kawasaki, and you gave them quite a good run for their money, it must be said, as well, before ultimately finishing 13 points behind the champions. It really has been a roller coaster over the past 5 years, hasn't it? Including, all of Ange Postecoglou's time in charge that was obviously highlighted by that amazing championship in 2019. But when you look back at last year and indeed look forward to the new campaign, what were your overall conclusions at the end of last season? And how much are you looking forward to how F. Marinos will get on this year?
Well, I'm really looking forward to the new year. Looking back on the last year, I think what really let us down were the other clubs in the J League who didn't take enough points off Kawasaki, because with their cooperation, we could have gotten a little bit closer. In terms of the number of matches that we won and the number of goals that we scored, as you said, like, it was quite a good year. Like, you couldn't really, I can't complain. Coming second, wow, we did that. But Kawasaki were really unstoppable from the very start. Even the first match with Marinos, and that was in kind of a lockdown situation, and managed to get tickets for that one, even though there weren't away supporters officially at the match. It didn't look very good at that point. Marinos came out of their pre-season and they were a little bit shaky, and it takes them a little bit of time to get into gear. But in the summertime, when we had all those matches to catch up because of the scheduling, it was almost a flawless couple of months where we really got all of the points and caught up as much as we needed. But as everybody remember, around that time, suddenly there were the rumours that Ange Postecoglou was going to go to Celtic, which seemed to be like an amazing rumour at the time. But that all panned out, and he quietly said goodbye. Then there was the handover period with the Japanese coach filling in for a while, and then Kevin Muscat coming. So this year will be the first full year of Kevin Muscat, and it's a little bit interesting to see how he will change things, because we had a working model, a good system going, and didn't really pan out so well in the final part of the year. But it was just difficult, and the performances are there. It's just whether it comes out on a certain day, and that really quite often is up to the other team. If they open it up and Marinos get a chance, then it can be a goal fester, as we've seen. But if it's really locked down and it's a hard kind of, I would say, boring match, but like a match where they can't really make any progress, then it's quite difficult to get the points in those kind of situations.
So this is the first transfer window under Kevin Muscat. What were your expectations going into it, and have the transfer dealings kind of met those expectations?
Well, so there's been a few, more the players that have left is really the holes that he's had to fill. We compared to a normal or usual transfer windows, I think we this year seem to go quite quickly. Like we in the past, we seem to be scrabbling around to get players like almost up to the very at the very end. It seemed like this time, you know, we got a few players lined up almost immediately that were signed very quickly. So I'm quite happy that they, you know, got things done. And in a way that might be, you know, like in recent years, Marinos has been a more attractive club to play at. Before, it was quite a little bit, I would say, staid. Like there was a lot of older players, not really sure, you know, whether they're going to do any good in a season. So it was a bit more difficult to sign players, I feel. Also, the whole COVID thing has really put the foreign players, you know, kind of on hold, really. Very difficult to get new people coming in. So, you know, I'm not sure even if we will get any last minute surprises there. But just quickly looking down, you know, picking up Katsuya Nagato from Kashima, that was a surprise. Joel Fujita coming in from Vortis, that seems again another surprise. You know, very young player. You know, hope he gets a lot of playing. Yuta Koike is coming in from Cereza. Not really, yeah, I don't really know much about him. I have to look up a bit more about him. And then from Sendai, Takuma Nishimura. Yeah, he looks good. I wasn't really, you know, kind of up on his past, but seemed to have very interesting career overseas with the stints in Moscow and then in the Portuguese club Portimonense. So that's a, you know, like a good selection of players that coming in. We've got forwards, midfielders, defenders, so strengthening all of the things. Really looking forward to Kabayama coming back from Yamagata. So he played kind of like eight times in the 2020. So he's been looking very, very good, and returning from Machida, like, well, Nadal Tala, he looks great on YouTube, picking up his video. So he came in last year but was immediately loaned out to Machida, but I think it's really good. So it's quite a few young players there, and then we've got our goalkeeper Obina Powell coming back again. He's coming back from Tochigi, and he played 20 times in 2020-2021, and including those ACL matches there when we had a little bit of a goalkeeper crisis, where he was really kind of thrown in straight out of university into being the top goalkeeper for a while. And he was a top goalkeeper initially until Takoka established himself, and that was pretty quickly after he was coming in. So I think he might be the number two goalkeeper now.
Yeah, okay. So thanks, Stuart. So we mentioned Fujita last week, Sam, coming in from Tokushima. One player that I didn't mention that Stuart has mentioned there is that Nishimura came in from Sendai. A bit of an enigmatic striker, I think it's safe to say, but 6 goals for a relegated team last year was, about the best that he could have done in those circumstances, I suppose. So, as I say, I didn't mention him last week. Will I live to regret that? Although he obviously has got a lot of competition for the forward places at F. Marinos, even though Daizen Miner has left for Celtic. Of course, if the listeners need a refresher, they've still got the strike force of Leo Ciara, El Burr, Marcos Jr., and of course, Teruhito Nakagawa there as well. So do you think Nishimura will get much of a look in? And obviously, the loss of Miner weakens them, but they still do have some fairly strong weapons there, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. And there are rumours of Anderson Lopez, my good friend, previous Sapporo striker, yes, coming in. So that could be even more competition. I think Nishimura has a good bit of versatility about him. He can play up front. He can play behind the striker. He could fill out on that left wing as well. There's a good player in him. I mean, when he got his move to CSKA Moscow after breaking through at Sendai, and then he's had a reasonable spell out in Europe. And last year was just a little bit odd that obviously Sendai were a struggling team. Nishimura, I don't think, started the season very well, had a very good spell in the middle, and then was randomly dropped for most of the end of the season, which didn't really make sense to me. So I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a direct replacement for Daisen Maeda at all. And I would still have questions about how are they going to replace the goals that Maeda have lost, because Elbert didn't look the same under Kevin Muscat as he did previously in the season. Leo Sierra, I don't think, is a striker that's going to score upward at like 15 plus goals a season. And yeah, Nakagawa, we're all waiting for him to be back to 2019 at Nakagawa. So I think there are still a lot of questions to be asked in those forward areas. But Nishimura, I think, adds that, yeah, he's a reasonably good option. And yeah, they have, not necessarily an embarrassment of riches, but plenty to offer up front. So, yeah, how would you, Stuart, how would you say this team is going to go about replacing the goals of Daisen Maeda? It's, not necessarily an easy task.
Yeah, that is a bit of a kind of a puzzle for me, how, who's actually going to make it to be, the starting striker there. But I'm looking back to a year ago, and I would not have thought that Maeda or Addo would have done so well last year. I was wow, they did okay the previous year, but they weren't really, that prominent. And it was the players that left that opened up the hole for Maeda and Addo to come in as a starting members every week. So maybe in a similar way, things will pan out like that. And I'm not sure, but I wouldn't predict that Nakagawa will come back and make a comeback in this year. Like I kind of have a feeling that he's a little bit spent, though he's a very popular player, and on his day he can definitely score a goal. It would be lovely to see him and Marcos getting back into that swing that they had before. So really, I think it's up for grabs. And I really hope that the younger players, are just not going to be, wasted over the year. But one of them makes it and turns out to be the surprise of the year. Also, forgot to mention that we have another returner in midfield is Kaina Yoshio, who was great when he played. Straight out of academy, and everybody's really, I think, looking forward to him coming back as well. So I hope this will also be his year, because I always like to see the academy players doing well.
Yes, indeed. All right. So we mentioned last week on our first podcast of the year, Stuart. Yes. And we've talked about it, of course, here as well, that Daisen Maeda was a part of the triple signing to Celtic. And Jun Amano has headed over to South Korea to Ulsan. And Titaton has returned to his native Thailand to join Buriram United. I think, Sam, you mentioned in passing last week that Takehiro Ogihara has returned to Kansai and signed for Kobe after 5 years at F. Marinos. So while he isn't everybody's cup of tea, he was certainly a fixture in the first team over the course of his 5 years with the F. Marinos. So any of the other departures really hit you in the heartstrings, Stuart? I don't know, Ataki Awada, the defender joining Yokohama FC. You're now former goalkeeper Yuji Kajikawa has headed over to Iwata. He was the starter for about half of the games in 2020. When you look at, obviously, Maeda is the headline departure, but any of the others you think weaken the squad?
It was sad to see Teraton go. He's very popular player, and on his day, you know, really added to the team. And apparently he turned down an offer to go to Frontale. I'm not sure the veracity of that information, but all credit to him that he didn't cross the river. And I think he was really hit hard by Angie leaving. His like Instagram and messages that he put up is just like almost seems brokenhearted that Angie left. So yeah, he came good under Angie and was really, you know, a great one. Ogihara, like I personally, you know, I always had mixed feelings about Ogihara because I would watch him on the field, and I think I narrowed it down to what it was. He's a very kind of like a lanky, and the way he runs wasn't very graceful, and it always kind of like jarred on me. But before the match, when he was doing the warm-up and the passing the ball and doing, you know, a little I won't say tricks, but you know, all the warm-up exercises, he looked a fantastic player at that point. But again, he's one of those kind of mainstay. Him and Kida really held the team together for quite a long time over the last few years. So I wonder how he will be missed in the grand picture. As you said, Takeo Wada going to Yokohama FC. I think actually this year there's been quite a few players from Marinos, like some of the younger players, like Taiga Nishiyama. He went to FC as well. He's transferred there, like a, you know, very young player, and Wada's gone there. Another we have a loan to FC, I believe. Yoshiyama, I think, is gone on there on loan. So it seems a little bit easier to go to FC these days. I don't know whether that shows some thawing in relations. Like it's kind of like unforgivable for the fans, but there seems to be some you know, cross-town transfers, and maybe with the current situation, like people who want to stay in the area are you know, choosing to go to FC, where previously they might not have done that. As you said, Kajikawa, I think, you know, okay, like he never really stood out as being, you know, like a potential number one keeper, and he'll probably get more time at Iwata. There's also we seem to have quite a few connections with players going to Iwata. There's like about four players that will be there who played in Marinos in the last year or so, and we also say a goodbye to Kenyu Sugimoto. He played well during the summer. It was a surprise that he came in. I thought he looked really happy there. He tried his absolute hardest, and I'm not surprised that you know, that he's out. You know, maybe he's got a more permanent position in Iwata. And it's a question for you, Ben. Do you think there is some like prestige in playing for Iwata as a kind of a historic club, that players, you know, might like to end their career there, or to have it on their, you know, their list of clubs that they played for?
Oh, good question, Stuart. It's definitely one of the yes, the storied clubs in J1 history, and I imagine that anybody born in and around Shizuoka would be, obviously, if they're not born into the orange of Shimizu, then yes, then Iwata would hold a certain attraction. If that's the case for Sugimoto, I'm not exactly sure, but they are still, in inverted commas, a big club, even though they have obviously really struggled over the course of the last decade or so. But very interested to see how Sugimoto might get on there, and Iwata as a whole, obviously, and we'll get on to previewing them later down the line in our series of podcasts. So as we look to wrap up this our first club of our club by club previews. Sam, I'll come to you first, and then maybe Stuart can issue a rallying cry for all of the F. Marinos supporters before he leaves us on this episode. So we got a couple of questions. I should say we got some terrific questions from our patrons on all four clubs that we'll be previewing on this episode. For F. Marinos in particular, they came from Chris and from Ralph, aka Akakichino 11, and both were dampening down expectations on F. Marinos. As we know, the last year definitely was a season in two halves for F. Marinos, bridged, of course, by that Hideki Matsunaga spell when he, whether he should have just stayed in charge or not, I guess is now it's a moot point. But yeah, won all four games of his in charge in between Ange leaving and Musket coming in. But both Chris and Stuart said that they weren't huge raps for Musket's methods, and that, a combination, Chris says, of Maida leaving and a full season of Musket in charge doesn't leave him feeling too positive. And Ralph says that the off season that we've just talked about didn't look too exciting to him, nor did the playing style after Musket took over. And I should say that, of course, F. Marinos beat FC Tokyo 8-0 under Kevin Musket in the fourth to last game of last season. So we did have reservations about Musket's methods as he gradually began to implement them. F. Marinos under 12s, I think, could have beaten FC Tokyo on that particular day. But there was, of course, the win over Kobe as well in the second to last game that secured second spot in the table. So, do you still hold the same sort of reservations you did towards the end of last year about Musket? And do you think that the combination of the off-season dealings and, a full season of Kevin Musket might see F. Marinos struggle to reach second again?
Well, I have to have some reservations. I thought there were various performances towards the end of last season where he got away a bit too far from the way that Marinos were playing previously, and it didn't quite work out. But that's not to say his style can't work out. He can't win titles. Of course it can, and he's got this winter period now to really drill in his methods and, maybe get Marinos playing exactly the way that he wants, and it can be successful. I think any winter where you see a player as good as Daizen Maida leave, also good midfield options in Ogihara and Amano and Tiraton, I think, it's going to be seen as quite negative. I think there's maybe a heavy reliance now on young players, which is both exciting in one respect to get these young players through, but it's also, can you win a title straight away necessarily with these bedding in all these young players? I think Joel Fujita will become a very good player, but he played like maybe a bit part in Tokushima season. You might be asking him to come in and play 20 games in the season for F. Marinos. I think it's a difficult ask. I just look at the team and I think there are maybe a few weaknesses. I think if Thiago Martins or Hatanaka is injured, I still think there's an issue at centre-back. I think midfield, you've got Kida there as the more established midfielder, but then otherwise you're either relying on an Iwata who is playing slightly out of position or younger players, and then going on to the goals that we mentioned earlier. I think it's a massive season for Marcos Junior, who I think is still a very good player, but I think has tailed off a little bit in the last couple of years. I think Marinos really need him to step up, and maybe one or two players short. I think I agree with both Akakichino 11 and Chris there that I do think Marinos may slip down a little bit. I don't think they're right on Kawasaki's tails this season, plus this squad has to deal with Champions League as well. So I think it'll be a slightly tougher season for Marinos. But Stuart, do you have confidence that maybe a title push is not out of the realms of possibility for this team?
Well, I think I agree with pretty much everything you said. Like, the facts are there. The facts are out before us. And what's interesting to me is looking now, following Celtic and Postecoglou there, there's a lot more press coverage of what he says, and there's a lot more kind of behind the scenes stuff that you can see. If there was anybody to replace him, who could it have been? I think, as a you might say, somebody who wants to be have the success of Postecoglou, then I think Kevin Muscat is definitely riding on his coattails there, and so he's got a lot of motivation to show that he can do it too. And if you think about, okay, how did Postecoglou play? Like, are they going to was he doing anything particularly badly that needs to be fixed? Well, you'd say not really. Like, they did well, just as you said, in the summer break, just following on with the players' motivation there. So one of the big things, though, I think, is the deciding, you know, factor with Kevin Muscat, and is that you can never be Ange Postecoglou. Like, he seems to be a very special kind of motivator, man motivator. So it's whether, even if he had the same players, without the players leaving, can Kevin Muscat motivate the players to do that fantastic, you know, title run, or even when things go badly, to get them out of the situation and do that, and that's yet to be seen. So this will be the first year that he really gets his a motivational message across. But in a funny way, I actually feel a little bit more confident than I did the first season that Ange Postecoglou took over, because at that time, the Celtic fans went through, unless you followed Australian football, you really didn't know much about him. And I immediately read his book and watched all those old TV interviews on Australian TV, and got to know the person over the first few matches. And it was a bit shaky at the very start, and didn't know if it's going to work out. And that was a really roller coaster season. So I'm a little bit more confident now that the team, the remaining members, know how to play. We've got the coaching staff who were there in the title run. I think we've got one of those returning. Was it Greg has returned? So there's a good foundation there, but it's just, whether it all pans out. And as you say, there's a lot of untried players there too, but we've had our surprises in the past. So I'm going to be positive about it and looking forward to it, but we'll see how it goes on.
All right, yeah, it promises to be a really interesting season for F. Marino's, obviously the closest team to Kawasaki in 2021, and they'll look to go one better in this new campaign. So, Stuart, thank you ever so much for joining us on this this first preview episode of the new season. And as we've said earlier, we very much look forward to hearing a lot more from you in the weeks and months to come.
Okay, yeah, we'll see what I can come up with. Yep, thanks very much for having me.
Okay, well, thanks again to Stuart. Always great to catch up with him. And as we say, look forward to hearing a lot more from him in the not too distant future. And now it's time to welcome in our second guest of the episode. And he is a first timer on the JTalk airwaves. But like Stuart, we're going to be hearing a lot more from him in the weeks and months to come. Representing FC Tokyo and the FC Tokyo Kai guys, it's a Thomas Pennington. Thomas, welcome to JTalk. And how are you?
Ben, thank you so much for having me on. Long-time listener, first-time caller, so I'm really thrilled to be here. It's been an interesting off-season for us.
Most definitely, and very much look forward to diving into it all with you very shortly. But you're a first-timer on JTalk, Thomas. So, all first-timers, when I remember, we do like to hear about your backstory, how you made it to Japan and how you got interested and involved in the club that you support.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So, I got into Tokyo and really the J-League when I was a high schooler. I came to Tokyo on exchange, and it just so happened that season, Verdy were still in J1. And my host family, is a high school boy, the same age as me, just decided, I want to go see a soccer game. I want to see one game before I leave Japan. Does Tokyo have a team? We have two. Oh, okay, great. Well, who can we see? And it's like, well, FC Tokyo is at home this weekend and you aren't here next week, so we'll go to this game. So, all right, go and see FC Tokyo. And I decided at that point, I have to be an FC Tokyo supporter. I'm sitting in the home end. You know, it was a pretty dull 1-0 game, but, you know, it was the experience of going to it. I came back to Japan in 2009, was a distant FC Tokyo supporter. I was actually in Kagawa at the time. We played Kamatamare Sanuki once in the Emperor's Cup, just by luck of the draw that Kamatamare Sanuki were hosting the game. So I was able to go to that one in Kagawa. And then by chance, you know, Alex Bishop, who is the co-host of FC Tokyo Kai Guys account, you know, we were co-workers at a time, having a chat over lunch, found out that we mutually liked FC Tokyo and decided from that point, you know, I need to go and be a ticket holder for Tokyo. And, you know, our group has grown quite large after that. You know, there's a couple of other Japanese and non-Japanese who follow us and support us, obviously. But most importantly for me, I think, you know, what I've enjoyed the most of being a Tokyo fan was getting to bring my daughter into it and letting her experience the, well, I can't call it joys of being an FC Tokyo supporter, but, you know, getting to bring her to the games. Hilariously, her first season was 2019. When we had that magical run all the way. Well, it didn't end in the way that we wanted it to, but, you know, it was that great season where we barely lost at home. I think we lost 2 games in 2019. And, yes, she loved it. She loved going to see the games. The atmosphere, the fans were great, you know, and it was just part of that whole way for us to kind of bond. And now that she's growing up as a Tokyo supporter, you know, it's a lot of fun.
Yep, that's absolutely brilliant, mate. So, yeah, it's great to have you on board. As we mentioned in part one, Stuart is, organizing Yokohama F. Marino's podcast for us. And yourself and Alex are going to be doing the same about FC Tokyo. And, yeah, we can't wait to hear what you guys are going to come up with. As you probably know from experience listening to the podcast, I often get myself tied up in knots when trying to explain my feelings about FC Tokyo. So I'm sure the two of you will be able to do it in a far more legible basis.
Yeah. You know, I mean, anybody who follows the pod and follows us knows that we can get quite colorful about certain players on the team, particularly a now ex-captain that we love to rag on. But yeah, no, we're really looking forward to it. And, you know, I have to obviously say thank you to you and Sam for welcoming us on board, because, you know, in the off season, we were getting a lot of messages. Honestly, we were getting a lot of messages saying, like, you guys need to start a podcast. Like, you were doing a blog at that point, and we were just mulling it over. Like, can we really do a podcast? Like, would it work? And then out of the blue, you came up and you're like, what do you guys think about this? And, you know, Ben, like, I remember when I got your message and I looked at it with Alex, I'm like, mate, that's the sign, we got to do this. There's no excuses now. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to it. We don't have a name just yet. You know, we're still working that out, but the season fast approaching, we hope to have that cemented down. And yeah, we're thrilled to be a part of the JTOP family as well.
Absolutely outstanding. Yeah, really looking forward to hearing what is going to be coming down the pipe from you guys. And welcome aboard. And great to hear that you're really looking forward to it as well, Thomas. All right, so let's get on to it. Are you really looking forward to the 2022 version of FC Tokyo? Obviously, 2021 was a season that we had to endure rather than enjoy. I think it's safe to say we continued our gradual. I'm saying we, obviously, I hope the listeners are familiar with the fact that I'm an FC Tokyo supporter as well. Tokyo continued their gradual slide down the table, of course, from that magical 2019 season when they came up just short, finishing second, sixth in 2020 and ninth last year. It was obviously the end of the Kenta Hasegawa era. He was sacked after the 8-0 defeat to F. Marinos. Of course, that I did mention as well in part one. I really am a sucker for punishment, as twice I've mentioned it on the same episode. But a new era has dawned at Ajinomoto Stadium, Thomas, with a new manager, a new Spanish coach arriving after two seasons in J2 with Niigata. I want to call him Albert Puig because that's what it looks like on a piece of paper. But I'm reliably informed that that's not quite how you pronounce his surname. But yes, how much are you looking forward to what Albert might be putting out on the pitch for us this year?
Well, I mean, I think you can first take a look at our current Twitter icon and see how excited we are due to the Catalan pronunciation of his name being Pucci. And, you know, we're honestly, like, I mean, last season was dreadful by all accounts. You know, that Marinos game was horrible to watch. You know, the team lacked ideas, lacked creativity. You've got Albert coming in and, you know, the team, like, watching J2 last season, you know, I was optimistic about how he played in the first bit of the season. You know, it's unfortunate how Niigata dropped down the table as the season progressed. I think a lot of that came due to injuries, but you saw the football that they were playing. It was great attacking football. You know, them and Ryukyu got off to phenomenal starts, but he had the team playing really, really great football. Now that he's moved it up to J1, I think there's a massive budget increase, you know, the talent that we have there. Hopefully players like Leandro will keep a cool head for the season. You know, I don't know what Hasegawa and him got up to last season, but, you know, it was very clear that losing Leandro for that long part was painful to watch. And, yeah, you know, Albert's come in, you know, in this training camp, he's done phenomenal, like, communications, like, with us, the fans. Like, you know, we've got insight into, you know, how he's getting the players ready, you know, talking about being like one family. You know, there looks to be him trying to set a lot of unity, and it's really looking like it'll transition onto the pitch. So I'm really excited to see him start kicking off, although you couldn't really ask for a worse game to kick the season off with Frontale away. You know, that's not been a good fixture to us, in recent years, with the exception of, I think, 2019 and, of course, the League Cup semifinal in 2020. So, you know, I think the players that we brought in, we've strengthened the defense quite nicely. You know, like Slovic being a great signing and goal. Hatano, I think, as good as he has been, he's been a bit difficult when it comes to commanding the pitch and commanding his goal. You know, you look at the League Cup final as one example of that, where, you know, they scored off of him dropping the ball, and I think he was just bullied into that one in one sense. So he could have been a bit better in situations like that in high pressure games. You know, he's not always been there collectively, and you know, it's shown obviously with the results we've gotten in the season. One thing I am still a little bit curious about is what's going on with Umvini. You know, we signed this phenomenal player in the off season from last year. We gave him his debut in the League Cup, you know, which Alex and I were there for. He scores a goal in his debut. It's like, what more can a defender do to, you know, to announce himself to the team? And then he played, I think, like 6-7 games, maybe, you know, a couple of substitute appearances, but he never really was utilized. And now, you know, he's not even mentioned in the squad at all. So, yeah, I'm curious what the club's planning to do with him. I'm fairly certain he's still under contract, but, you know, obviously we're looking to move away from him. So I'm hoping we come to an answer soon, because, you know, obviously with the season coming, I'd just like to put that one to bed. But that's not to say, you know, we've got a great defense coming back, and now a very experienced defense. I think our weakest point right now is still our midfield, though. I think that we need to get a replacement for Higashi.
So you say that you've watched obviously a lot of Albert Pucci, if we're going to use that Niigata team last season. Obviously, he's got this brand of football, really positive, very dissimilar to Kenta Hasegawa. Do you think there's currently enough players at his disposal at FC Togo to kind of implement that brand of football? Or do you think there is going to be a bit of transition? It might need a couple of windows to really get it right.
Honestly, I think it depends on on the health of the squad. You know, like last season, we had horrible luck with the right back position. Didn't matter who played there, somebody was getting injured. You know, we had Ogawa go out injured. We had Hotaka go out injured. We had Takumi go out injured. We brought in Suzuki, who then he also got injured. You know, we were just incredible luck with that right back position. So I think the first couple of games we'll be able to see what he's thinking. I think he'll stick with a couple of the experienced boys. You know, obviously Morishige, captain, Leandro, and I'm hoping Idalton will start. It's looking like, although I'd like to see Watanabe up front with Leandro and Idalton, I think unfortunately Higashi's going to get that one. As much as I like to disagree with that. But I think like losing players like Omari won't really hurt the squad too much. You know, I think he made it known that him and Hasegawa were not always seeing eye to eye, and like Leandro as well, not seeing eye to eye. So I think he was always ready to move. I think there was more than just the manager with his situation. I think you could look at the first couple of weeks. We'll see, you know, how he's looking to play, and I hope we'll see a good attacking football from him though.
So overall in the window, Thomas, do you think we've come out as a net positive then? I mean, we mentioned last week that Tsuyoshi Watanabe has gone to Belgium and Juan Omari has been released, as you mentioned yourself there. Takumi Nakamura, the right back, has joined Yokohama FC in J2. And just in the past week or so, Kyosuke Tagawa has left on an 18-month loan to Santa Clara in Portugal. But the ins, obviously Slovic is the headline act, and Henrique Trevisan and Yasuki Kumoto will go towards filling the breach at centre back. And then further forward, Keita Yamashita arrives from Tosu, and of course the intriguing signing to end all recent Tokyo intriguing signings is Kuryu Matsuki, the midfielder, and of course the captain of the high school tournament winning Aomori Yamada high school team. So overall it's a net positive then. And so where does Matsuki get a look in for you in this squad? Because he looks like an absolutely terrific player.
He scored some incredible goals in that tournament. If you watched any of the Aoyama games that he was playing, oh my goodness, I could not believe what I was seeing there. Like, we've got a decent product there. What I'm hopeful for here is a different treatment than what we saw with Takefusa Kubo. You know, when we had Kubo, for whatever reason, in 2018, Hasegawa sent him on loan. I could not understand that. You know, we were lacking attacking options. We have this young, raw talent who is raring to go, and we send him out on loan to Marinos, and he scores his debut goal there. I could not understand that. So I'm hoping that Albert will treat Matsuki a lot better here. I think you'll see his debut in the League Cup, to be honest. You know, the second game, we've got, I believe it's Iwata at home. You know, our first League Cup game in the group stage, I think it would be a great debut for him. If not debut, at least a substitute appearance. I think for the league, we saw what Frontale did to Takumi last season. Mitoma absolutely tore him to shreds, and he was not the same player after that game. You know, that was... unfortunately for him, that was just a dose of reality. And I think that introducing Matsuki to Frontale will be a bit of a mistake. So I wouldn't anticipate him to see him on Friday in the debut, but I'm definitely excited to see him. I think Yamashita scored some great goals, for Tosu last season. So that's going to give Nagai a definite run for his money. Who knows? We could see him partner Diego up front. So that would be an incredible thing to see. In the back, you know, Trevorson is a great signing. So I think the stability, the only thing that's still, you know, left me scratching my head about our defense is obviously Ogawa going attacking forward and, you know, leaving our defense exposed. But Nagatomo seemed to calm himself down from that. Morishige, obviously a rock in defense. Slovic will, I hope, be a very good critical signing for us and provide much stability and goal. I think we're looking great this off season. So I'm hopeful for the season ahead. You know, it depends on how quick we can adapt to Albert's style of play. But, you know, all signs so far are pointing to being a good start.
Kind of a question for you both, I suppose. What would you consider to be a successful season this year for FC Tokyo?
Oh, God. I went into last season, and anybody who saw my J predictions from last season knows that I picked Tokyo to win the league last season. that was obviously me being a bit of a homer on that one. I would say, for me, a push for the top four would be an acceptable one. We need to be pushing for the ACL. I think that's what Mixi are looking for as well. Them being new ownership, they're going to want a little bit more exposure. Maybe not in the same as what Mikitani's done with Rakuten and Vissel Kobe, but I definitely think top four would be an acceptable performance in the league. Within the League Cup, I'd obviously like to see another performance of us getting, you know, deep. A deep run would be great. If we get to the quarterfinals or the semifinals, I'm fine with that. And I mean, the Emperor's Cup, you can only go up from last season. We lost to the Jutendo. So anything is better than that.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, yeah, I think top four is an optimistic goal, but I think it's something that is not necessarily out of reach. Yeah, hopefully Albert comes in and is a breath of fresh air and is able to get his ideas across over the course of the preseason, and it'll be difficult to hit the ground running at Todoroki, but yes, if we can get off to a decent start there and at least show some positive signs in that first game, and then hopefully kick on. There wasn't quite the off season clear out that I was hoping for, but I do understand that it's difficult to get rid of 10 or 15 players at once. although I would have liked to see the back of probably even more than that many, if we're honest. But I mean, well, Sam, you've led us on to a couple of questions that we got from our patrons on FC Tokyo, and that, to be honest, they were a little bit of a mixed bag, so we'll have to try and sort them out. Chris and Ralph, who we mentioned in part one with Stuart, are back with questions about FC Tokyo as well. Chris says that, yes, he doesn't want to get us too excited as FC Tokyo supporters, Thomas, but could we see a top six finish this season? I would say to Chris that, after last year, that might be, asking for a bit much. But, yeah, I mean, we have to be top six, Thomas, don't we? As the absolute starting point, we have to be at least sixth, and we can't be settling for ninth and finishing sixth is a good season. We have to be pushing for higher up the table. Our three questioners, and I'll throw in from Graham Freche as well. They're a little bit mixed on whether we've made enough new signings and whether they could have an impact. Chris says that, yes, the new manager, the new signings and the new investment from Mixi that you've mentioned, Thomas, could be reasons for optimism. But Ralph says that apart from Slovic, he didn't see any real substantial signings. So I guess for us as Tokyo supporters in the nitty gritty as we are, we can see where some of these signings could really have an impact. But I guess from the outside, Slovic aside, we haven't really signed any huge names, have we?
No, I think we've signed more depth this season. You know, I think we had an established core group of attacking options. You know, Adalton was great in the League Cup for us. And, you know, actually, if you think about it, he actually got the golden boot in the League Cup last year with all the goals that he scored. I think he ended up, you know, playing fewer games and getting five goals out of that. So great return from him. Heartbreaking how we lost it, but you know, that's football. I think between him, Diego and Leandro, those three, the Otridante as we call them, I think they've gelled so well. You know, we saw bits of that in the 2020 season in 2021, you know, when Hasegawa tried to implement that attacking three, and it was working so well. And it's just a shame that COVID really brought that down. But with, you know, where we needed to bring in reinforcements, I mean, if you look at it, it was always the same with Hasegawa. It was always Diego starts, Nagai comes on as a substitute. Diego starts, Nagai comes on as a substitute. You know, we need another attacking option. Unfortunately for Tagawa, you know, when it came down to his final third, he was not very good in front of goal. And, you know, we've signed a utility player in Yamashita who could provide us with those extra goals. Who knows how many he could score? I'm hoping for 10. You know, that would be a good return for me if he can get 10. Obviously, you know, Diego is going to lead the way on that front. When it comes to the defense, you know, again, we were leaking goals last season. Like, where our positioning was all over the place. You know, I think a lot of that was down to our players going out of position. You know, I mentioned Ogawa bombing down into attack, you know, going from the right side over to the left and then not tracking back properly and leaving our defense exposed. You know, things like that are still bound to happen, unfortunately, if he starts. But I think what we've done here is we've solidified our bench. We've given competition to our established attackers, like I said, with Yamashita. I would love to see Watanabe and maybe Matsuki could come in and be like a Takefusa Kubo in 2019. Who knows? I mean, he's still young, but I would love to see him get a couple of chances and a good run in the team. Ideally, I would like to see him start the league, though, League Cup, before moving into the league. I think our weak point, though, still remains in midfield, though. I don't think we reinforced that enough with a little bit more depth. I think, you know, Higashi needs to be he needs more competition. I think him losing the armband was a good thing, obviously, given what happened at the end of the last season. But I still don't think I think he still got in his head that he's an established 11. And I think Watanabe is not going to be able to push him that much, unfortunately. I still see Higashi slotting into the 11 and Watanabe being fine with it being.
Maybe I won't be picking just to finish in the top four after all, then.
You know, like, I'm confident in our attack. I'm confident in our defense now. You know, I think, like, Nagatomo coming back is great leadership. You know, he's a veteran from Europe who's played a lot of European football. You know, he's played in the UEFA Champions League, so he's been in those kind of games, and he can provide that stability. And I think we saw that when he came back last season. You know, it was a bit of a spark, a bit of a jump in the club, but, you know, it was a little bit unfortunate with regards to the injuries we were having. You know, we're having to bring in, like, the academy in order to fill in that right back position. We weren't using Uvini at all. You know, we were using Omari.
Very much your pet project, isn't he, Uvini? Yeah, you just can't get your head around that, can you?
I can't understand it. You know, like, we won the League Cup and we used the funds to bring in an experienced defender who has won championships elsewhere. You know, he's won titles, so, like, why would we bring in this player and only play him for five games? I can't understand that.
Yeah. All right, then. So the listeners are saying, Sam, it's crying out for a neutral's perspective here. So, Thomas and I have been talking about Tokyo at length here. So how do you see this transfer window shaking out for Tokyo? And, I mean, is Yamashita actually going to have an impact here, or is he just going to be like Tagawa, who obviously arrived from Tosu as well? Is he going to be up to much? Is he going to be challenging for a spot in Albert's front three? Have Tokyo done enough to strengthen their squad to say that fourth is a fourth or higher is a realistic target for the team in 2022? So basically, how have you seen the off season, and how do you think Tokyo are shaping up?
It's definitely been an interesting off season. I don't think I'm quite on the board with top four finish this season. I think kind of like Ricardo Rodriguez last season, I think there's a transition going on here. I think you just have to set the foundations, really, and then maybe next season. This window was interesting because you bring in an attacking manager, and I guess the expectations are that follows a load of attacking signings, a load of really exciting creative players, and he's gone the kind of the other way, and I think it's a good way that he's gone in, just really solidifying that base, because he's seen that with Abe, with Leandro, with Diego Adalto, there are really good attacking players there, and if you just kind of let them off the leash a bit, that instantly improves FC Tokyo as an attacking force. So I'm pretty confident that there will be an improvement in FC Tokyo this year. I think there's definitely the players there. I have a few issues. I think right back, as has been mentioned, is a definite issue. You've got about six or seven that have played there over the course of the last couple of seasons. None of them have looked particularly good, in my opinion. And then midfield, as Thomas has said, I think if you take Shuto Abe out of that team, all creativity seems to go. I mean, Aoki is okay. Kimoto will come in and will hold, but that's not really going to improve attacking-wise. And what else have you got? Mita, Takahashi, Kigashi, it doesn't really help.
Kono as well.
Yeah, Kono if he was ever fit. I mean, yeah, if you can get him it's a good option.
I completely agree with that. I mean, you look at our midfield when, you know, Abe, for example, when he got that three-game ban for breaching COVID rules, you know, you see the games after that. Leandro wasn't playing. Abe wasn't playing. We just lacked any kind of threat going forward. You know, I think our best chances came from Takahagi, and Takahagi's not that kind of guy anymore. You know, he's getting up there in age, and you know, the pace that he has, he really controls the game and he can really open it up. But you know, having to rely on him to do all the attacking when Leandro was intentionally not being selected, Abe was injured, Kono was injured, you know, Higashi, no thank you. Mita is still a player. I think Mita could still offer a lot. You know, he's a dead ball specialist. He could float in a couple of great free kicks into the box. I think he still offers that threat as a secondary taker for Leandro, kind of, you know, closer to goal. But I agree. I think the right back position is still a weak point. I think the holding midfield just doesn't offer too much still. I think we're still lacking in that area, and I'm concerned about how teams like Kawasaki will overrun us. But to your point, though, in regards to a Rodriguez transition season, I'll take an Emperor's Cup. I'm fine with that.
I'm sure you would. And I do think there is positivity in this window for Tokyo. I'm really looking forward to seeing Matsuki. Obviously, we haven't quite got the high school championship over here on British TV as much as I might want it. So I haven't seen anything of him, but you've seen all the hype about him. I really hope that he does get plenty of opportunities first in the League Cup and then the league. And with Yamashita as well, I think that's a really good signing because he didn't necessarily start every game for Sagan Tosu, but whenever he was on, he usually scored. He was one of those that you can just throw on, and you think if he's in the, you get him in the right area, he'll score a goal more so than maybe Nagai. Besides a couple of purple patches, he's a little bit dodgy in front of goal. But Yamashita has a bit more of an eye for that. Gives a bit of a different player from Diego Oliveira. So yeah, I think as an impact sub, I think that's a really good one. I would just improve that midfield slightly, and then there's a pretty nicely rounded FC Tokyo team, but I think you may be one or two players off a more concerted challenge at the top four.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing a holding midfielder come in. I think we just need that stability in front. You know, if you look at what we were planning, what Hasegawa was initially planning when we went to that 4-3-3 formation, you know, he was initially moving Morishige into that defensive midfield role, and he was playing it perfectly. You know, our ACL games, he kept playing really well in that role. And I thought, this is the way that we're going to go forward. We brought in, I hate to bring it up again, but we brought in Bruno. There's him. We've got, you know, we had him and Watanabe in defense. We had Omari. I thought, okay, this is a great opportunity for Morishige to be that defensive midfielder. But, you know, I don't see that happening again under Albert. I think that Morishige is going to be stuck in center back.
All right then. Well, yeah, it's probably a transition season under Albert, but for Thomas and my sake, we hope that Tokyo can nudge their way back up the table, and at least be interested in maybe the both of the domestic cup competitions as they come to their conclusions. And where we end up in the league, well, I guess we'll just have to take whatever we can get. So thanks again to Chris and Ralph for their questions. To Graham Freche as well. Where will Tokyo land with the new coach and all those new players? Graham Freche, well, if I knew the answer to that, yes, I'd be a millionaire already. But I think we can have a little bit of optimism that it can't get much worse than 2021. So top six, I think for Thomas and myself is probably what we're shouting for. And if we can nudging the top four, and then Sam's probably understandably pumping the brakes on that sort of talk, I think, at this stage of things. But all right, so we will leave this part of the podcast there. Thomas, great to catch up with you again. Obviously, we've been interacting many times at the stadium over the past few years, but to get you onto the podcast for the first time and to have you join the JTalk family is really exciting. So once again, we're looking forward to catching up with you again soon and hearing what yourself and Alex can come up with for us on the podcast that you're going to be putting together for us.
Yeah, no, Ben, again, thank you so much for giving us the platform. You know, we're really thrilled to be a part of the JTalk family and can't wait for the season to kick off. Slightly optimistic, you know, who knows? But as long as we finish above Fukuoka, I'm thrilled.
All right, welcome back to part three. And thanks again to Thomas for his input on the new FC Tokyo season there in part two of the episode. All right, so moving on, and we're heading back into Kanagawa and talking about Shonan Bellmare, who, Sam, I think it's very safe to say, have lived a very charmed life over the course of the past four top flight seasons. Of course, in the most recent campaign, they finished 16th, a point clear of relegation, and they were basically saved only by the stunning thumping that Hiroshima handed out to Tokushima on the final day. There were some positives, though, for Bellmare, and it was one thing that I was mentioning towards the tail end of the season. Their goal difference was far superior to any of the other relegation dogfight combatants. That's because their defense was the best outside the top eight in the division last year. They only let in 41 goals across their 38 league games. But like so many of the teams in the bottom section of the table, and indeed all of the bottom eight in last year's season, they scored fewer than a goal a game. So and not surprisingly, we do have a question from one of our patrons on where the goals are going to come from for Shonan this year. It's a bit of a running theme with them, I understand. But, basically, even before last year, of course, if there was relegation at the end of 2020, they would have gone down after they finished bottom. But in that COVID hit season, of course, there was no relegation to J2. And then in the two seasons previous to those, 2019 and 2018, they just about hung on by the skin of their teeth, including, of course, surviving after drawing the promotion relegation playoff final against Tokushima in 2019. So they have led a very much a charmed life, Sam, and they made the most of their reprieve just about in 2021. But Akakichino 11 asks whether this could be the first year in a while they won't have to worry too much about relegation. How do you think Shonan are shaping up for the new campaign?
Well, I kind of generally agree with him, although I still think they're in a relegation battle. This is the first time, like usually if I look at my J-Pred and I'm picking the relegation places, Shonan are probably one that I'll just always chuck in there because they're there or thereabouts and they love a flirt with relegation. And I'm sure they probably will this season as well. But yeah, defensively, they're very good. And they've added to that defense kind of in midfield. I think the signings they've made in Yonemoto and Nagaki brings them a very solid midfield, great experience, and it will only help their defensive solidity. So they've got a very good base to work on, especially with Tani signing on for another season as well. So, yeah, I think that really helps them. But goals is always the issue with Shonan. And I think the lack of goal scorers they have really in the squad is a reason why they're still going to be in a relegation battle. I don't think they've got enough about them to pull clear and have a completely comfortable season. But in general, I do like the squad. It's just whether Yusuke Sagawa can join up with the strikers enough to offer enough goals there and to help out Wellington and Tarik El-Yanoussi and Machino and Ohashi, all kind of average to okay in their own way, but not really any out-and-out goal scorers.
Yeah, so I guess the most important bit of business they did over the winter was to renew the loan from Gunma Osaka for the goalkeeper, Kosei Tani, who he will now spend his third full season on the Hiratsuka coast. And yes, the two major ins to midfield will certainly add a lot of stability, as you said yourself there, Sam, to the backbone of this Shonan squad, with Ryota Nagaki returning from 6 years at Kashima Antlers. Of course, he'd spent the first 6 years of his career with the Belmari before making the move up to Ibaraki, and at the age of 33, and presumably with still at least a couple of years left in his tank, he is back and obviously brings a lot of experience and has played in some huge games for Antlers over the course of his time there, including winning the Champions League, of course. So it's very much the prodigal son returning home to the Lemon Gas Stadium in the form of Nagaki, and Takuji Onomoto, who you mentioned as well, Sam, of course, a former favourite of mine after he spent 10 years at FC Tokyo, and it looked like his career was very much on the wane as he was a surplus to requirements in his last couple of seasons at Ajinomoto Stadium. But I think it's safe to say he was very much reinvented at Nagoya. And while he still did have his fitness concerns, never making more than 30 league appearances in his 3 years at Grampus, still at just 31 years old, he does, I think, have a lot to offer and adds a lot of steel to the Shonan midfield, arriving on loan from Grampus.
Yeah, I think it's a real coup, this one, for Shonan, because Yonemoto, when fit, was first choice at Nagoya without really much question. I mean, him and Inagaki formed a very good partnership, and that was in a team that was, for long periods of the last season, challenging for the title. So for Shonan to get a player of his quality into their midfield, I think it's a great signing for them. They do have to worry about his injury record. He's got kind of dodgy knees and doesn't really get through seasons, but I think it can be managed. He's not going to play necessarily as many games as he would at Nagoya. Obviously, they played they might go further in other competitions. I don't think Shonan will go as deep and whatnot, so I think he could be managed a little bit more, and the system as well might suit him as well, because you can fit quite a few players around him, so he might not have to do as much running as he maybe would have in that Nagoya midfield. So I think it's a terrific pick up for them, and it was a weird one to see him leave Nagoya. I thought he would have fit into Kenta Hasegawa's plans quite well. So really good signing for them, and I think the business on the whole has been very positive for Shonan.
Yes, indeed. I'll go along with that. And the new manager, Satoshi Yamaguchi, coming in, Sam, he's a little bit spoilt for choice then in central midfield. And if Yonemoto can stay fit, then that'll be a massive boon for him. So Johnny Nicol was the patron who was wondering where the goals were going to be coming from. But he also did wonder, Sam, how the coach would fit Yonemoto, Nagaki, and the incumbent Satoshi Tanaka into the one lineup. But I guess, with Yonemoto's ongoing fitness concerns, it might just be horses for courses and two from three on a weekly basis. Or I don't know whether Yamaguchi might even consider a doubling down, if you like, on the defensive solidity at Shonan, and perhaps playing the odd game here or there with three properly defensive-minded midfielders sitting in there.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good option. I think it's an option they'll use fairly often. If you play maybe Tanaka as that base midfielder and Yonemoto and Nagaki in front of him, because Nagaki's 33, he's not necessarily wants to be in a two-man midfield. There's a lot of running there, and you kind of want to limit that for Yonemoto as well. So if you have Tanaka patrolling in behind them, it kind of covers both of those players. But they've got lots of options if they have those players. Yes, they could rotate in and out, and you can rest Yorimoto and Nagaki whenever you need to. Or you could bring Tanaka into centre-back, which is kind of what, if you've not looked at Johnny Nichols' J1 preview on his blog this week, I mean, I encourage everyone to do so. It's a terrific read. And Johnny, in that, goes for Tanaka slipping back into the back line, which he has done previously. He's quite adept in that position as well. But I do think Yamaguchi will look to have Tanaka into midfield. I think the more he's on the ball, the better for Shonan. At 19, I mean, he had a terrific year last year, and he's only going to improve. So if they can all at all help it, I'd want them to play Tanaka in central midfield. But yeah, there's lots of options there and lots of experience that are only going to help Tanaka grow as a footballer.
Yes, indeed. So, well, what about the other half of Johnny's question then? I mean, we've kind of already begun to address it, but I mean, back in part one with Stuart, we listed off all of the attacking options available to Kevin Muscat at Yokohama F. Marinos, and then you've just done the same a few minutes ago talking about Shonan's options, and it's hardly a murderer's row, is it? I mean, with Wellington, Tarek El-Yunusi, Shuto Machino, and, Ohashi, etc. Does Sagawa add anything to that attacking Arsenal for you? I mean, it's only two league goals in each of the past two seasons for Sagawa. He spent the four seasons with the Kashiwa Reysol, but never really kicked on to become the player that they had hopes for him, obviously, at Hitachi Dai. And one intriguing player returning to the club is the 20-year-old Yamato Wakatsuki, who has spent the past season on loan at the Swiss club Sion, scoring one league goal as well, but having his appearances they did appear to be quite sporadic. So whether Wakatsuki might be able to come in and be a little bit of a an ace in the hole for Yamaguchi, whether he might be able to take some J1 defences by surprise, I don't know how much responsibility will be placed on his shoulders. But, in terms of the attack, I mean, it's just the eternal question for Shonan, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a lot to ask of Wakatsuki to come in. This will be his first professional season in Japan. He's only 20, and as you say, he had that loan spell, but I mean, other than like a fair period, maybe of a month or two, where I think it was about this time last year where he got into that team at Sion, he looked a decent player. They were quite high on him there. But after that, he kind of faded away and didn't really get a look in. So, yeah, there's not a massive amount of goals behind him at the moment. So I can't sit here and say I'm confident that he comes in and he's the answer to Shonan's issues up front. I don't think he is. And Sagara, I think, has the potential to be. But as you say, he's had kind of lean spell for the last couple of years at Kashua. I don't think he played as much as he should have in that team, but he also had a few injury niggles as well. So, but again, you're not going to hold your hat on Sagawa getting 10 goals a season or anything to help them out. So they are going to look to use Wellington. They're going to go wide. They're going to get crosses in. He is dangerous, and that's where you'll hope for knockdowns. You hope for him to bury a couple of headers as well. But again, you don't really see Wellington scoring much more than maybe 7 goals a season. If you're lucky, there's still no one there that's prolific, despite the high hopes I had for Tarek El-Yunusi a couple of years ago. So, yeah, I just don't see an express goal scorer in that team. And I think they're going to have to work really hard for their victories and, rely heavily on that solid defence.
Yes, indeed. All right, then. So there weren't any, huge outs, I don't think, from the squad this year, Sam, which I guess makes a welcome change for all the Shonan supporters. They're obviously used to, bringing players through and then seeing, a lot of them depart. Unfortunately for the Shonan faithful, Shintaro Nago's loan from Kashima has expired. So he has returned to Antlers, while Nagaki has obviously moved in the opposite direction on a permanent basis, while Mitsuki Saito, of course, who made his ill-fated move to Rubin Kazan for 2021, that was obviously severely injury impacted. Well, he returned from Rubin, but then has now gone on loan for the 2022 season to Gunma Osaka. His most recent appearances in J1, or his most recent season, sorry, saw him score 2 league goals in 33 appearances in 2020. And in his comments on the official Shonan website, Saito basically said he's going to Gunma, and then he wants wants to go back to Europe. So I think it's fair to say that he's played his last game for Shaunan Belmare. And, well, yeah, he'll be hoping to do the business for Gumba to attract the eye of scouts from anywhere in Europe, by the sounds of it. He just wants sounds like he just wants out of Japan. But anyway, so, yeah, I think overall it's hard to see them soaring up the table, isn't it, Sam? I mean, they the highest they've finished in all of these past five seasons, when they've four seasons rather, when they've really been struggling, is when they were just about the best of the teams that finished on 41 points. That famous season when five teams, including Iwata, who had to go into the promotion relegation playoff and lost it, all finished on 41 points. But yeah, it's I don't know whether I can see them even as high as 11th or 12th. But yeah, for me, I'm slightly more positive than I would normally be at the start of a Shonan preseason. So yeah, for me, I think they're, yeah, if I'm doing my J-Pred today with a gun to my head, I think I have them outside the bottom three. How about yourself as we wrap up this part of the pod?
Yeah, I mean, I think relegation is really difficult this year. I think last year we kind of rattled off about seven or eight candidates for relegation quite easily, and this year it just seems a little bit more difficult. I would have them just outside as it stands, but I'm not going to stick to anything at the moment, and I reserve the right to change on a week-by-week basis. But yeah, I do think that Shonan's business has been pretty good. I think they're an improved team on last season. I think, although I don't expect it to be comfortable, but I don't think Shonan fans would have it any other way, but I do think they'd just about keep their head above water again.
All right, then. And so to the fourth and final team that we'll be previewing in this this first round of J1 season previews. And, well, Sam, we are literally saving the best for last, aren't we? Kawasaki are the defending J1 champions. They won the title again for the second straight season and for the fourth time in 5 years. You are amongst listeners, the most sustained run of success in J1 history. In terms of domestic honours, for motivation, all that's left for Toru Oniki and his players is to match the 2007 to 2009 Kashima teams as the only club to three-peat in J1 history. But basically, they hold pretty much every other record going in the top flight after what they've done over this sustained period of excellence, Sam. And it did continue pretty much unabated in 2021. Although, as we mentioned with Stuart in part one, there was a stern challenge from F. Marinos, and there was a period of last year where I don't know, maybe it was wanting a breath of fresh air. I think we were all of the opinion that F. Marinos had seized control of the title race, even though they never actually went in front of Frontale, did they? But ultimately, yes, after finishing a whopping 18 points clear of second-placed Gumba Osaka in 2020, Frontale have won the league again by double-digit points. In this last season, it was by 13. So, yes, they were streets ahead of their competition again. And it's just a matter of, Mr. Oniki keeping the players' motivation high and, just keeping them wanting more, because it would be so easy for them to get complacent. But over the course of this run, it just doesn't seem like that's it's going to be stopping anytime soon, does it?
No, we've kind of asked that question many years now. Will they still have the hunger for it? And every season they do, they seem to get better as well. I mean, last year they got over that blip in the middle of the season after losing quality players like Tanaka and Mitoma. For them to regroup and then go on the run they did towards the end of the season, it just shows their mentality, the mentality of the manager. And I guess they have to do it again with Hatate leaving. A terrific player, but I don't necessarily think he is as big of a loss as Tanaka and Mitoma were at that point in mid-season. I think they've replaced Hatate pretty well. I mean, you look at the midfield six that they've got now, and you think, like, a couple of years ago, this was Morita, Tanaka and Hatate in there. But now you've still got six players that you could say would get into any midfield in the league. If you look at Oshima, and Jao Schmidt has actually come back, so maybe he's out of the doghouse and is allowed to play again next season. Tachi Banada, who was terrific last year when he came in. Wakizaka as well, who's always kind of been the unsung hero of that midfield. And they've added to that Tatsuki Seko, who I thought was magnificent for Yokohama FC last year, and obviously the big name signing of Chanatip. So yeah, terrific options there. They still look as strong as ever in that midfield. So yeah, they again, once again, the ones to beat.
Yes, most definitely. So okay, let's drill down a little bit deeper on the midfield then. You mentioned Yao Schmidt coming back in to the fold, which is a huge boon for Onikki, again, if he is indeed out of the doghouse, because we've seen how good he can be operating in that Kawasaki midfield. So, yes, Seko comes in, and we mentioned that last week, of course, coming from relegated Yokohama FC. But there was a lot of interest from our patrons in the move of Chanatip from Sapporo. Of course, the Thai sensation had played the five seasons up in Hokkaido. He's not an out-and-out goal scorer, so his stats don't jump off the page. 14 goals in 115 league appearances over the course of those five seasons. So that number suggests that, yes, staying fit was obviously a huge challenge for Chanatip as well in his time at Consadole. So that's something that we'll have to monitor as well. But yes, James Clark, he's the first mention on the podcast this year. So thanks, James, for your question. James wonders, how much game time do you expect Chanatip to get, Sam, with all of that competition in midfield? Chris, who we've already mentioned a couple of times, asks, does the arrival of Chanatip mean Kawasaki are nailed on favourites for three in a row? Ralph says Hatate leaving might make it more of a competition for the rest of the league, even with Chanatip coming in. But Graham Freche is, obviously not as upbeat and not anticipating that Chanatip will make quite an impact as maybe many of us expect. And obviously the J-League social media team are hoping that he will make, because, yes, they're pumping a lot of energy into pumping Chanatip's arrival at Kawasaki. Graham Freche asks, do you think Chanatip will really make Kawasaki better? He's a great player who has a lot of magic in him, but for an offensive player, he's unbelievably unproductive when it comes to goals and assists when you look at his stats. So everybody's wondering, so we want to get your thoughts on it, Sam. What sort of an impact do you think Chanatip can realistically have on this Kawasaki team, and can he make them better?
Well, this may be a strange answer for someone who works for a statistics company, but I don't look at statistics too much in terms of this. It doesn't sell the whole picture. I think Chanatip will bring that quality to that frontale midfield. I think he's got so much about him, the way that he can bring the ball out, the way that he can control possession, the late runs into the area. I think, his stats may be misleading slightly, but I think put them in to this frontale team, I think the assist for sure will go up, because I think Leandro Damião will put his chances away a little bit more than maybe the strikers have done at Sapporo. And I think, he will just add so much to this team. And like at Sapporo, I think obviously the injury record is not great for Chanatip. The last couple of years, he's had quite a few injuries, but he was so heavily relied upon that he was consistently rushed back from injury and just forced to play whenever, when he was probably not too fit. But you've seen with the way that they bring Oshima back after his various injuries, they are able to just kind of bring them back slowly because there's so many other options there. So I don't think he'll be worked into the ground quite as much at Frontale. They will obviously have a busy schedule with the ACL group there, so they'll but they are so consistent at rotating, and as I said, those six options there, they can easily name two different full midfield threes, and they're not really losing too much quality whoever they name. So I think that will help him as well. As with Hatate leaving is obviously a blow. He's a very good player. He's, if anyone saw his debut for Celtic, that first half, he just looked absolutely unplayable. So it is a big blow, but do I think that it brings them down into the pack too much? I don't really think so. With the two players that they brought in as well, and then if you add a returning Schmidt and maybe a fit Oshimura as well. That's maybe quite unlikely, but let's hope. But I think they've got more than enough to cover that that loss. Plus, every season, Frontale seem to be able to bring through these young players. If you just look at where Tachibana was this time last year, I don't think anyone had heard of him. And then he turned out to be a complete full-on starter for Frontale. So, yeah, I think it's a very good signing, Chanatip. I think their options are really good. And, yeah, I'd be still quite positive there. I think the only issue, as it usually is going into a season with Frontale, is they've not really picked up defenders. And they've still got Jesse Hale out for a good few months to start this season. So more work for Kurumaya and Yamamura at centre-back.
I don't know whether Oniki's got his blinkers on, or he just doesn't fancy bringing anybody else in. He doesn't think they'll fit into the way he wants to do things. So obviously you would imagine after the losing Jeziel for the amount of time that they did, and they obviously knew heading into the off season that he would be nowhere near ready for the start of this new campaign, you might have thought that prioritizing a defensive signing would have been something to get behind. But obviously he's put his faith in the players that are there, and as you say, Kurumaya, Yamamura, etc. will get their opportunities to fill in while Jeziel is rehabilitating. And just add Hatate to the list of names, Sam, of these absolutely terrific players that Frontale have lost. I mean, I'm sure we said it numerous times in the second half of last season. When is there going to be a breaking point where the rest of the league are able to catch up after losing Morita, Mitoma, Tanaka, and now Hatate? But, I don't want to speak for you, but I certainly don't have any other team in my thoughts when it comes to putting your team in first spot in my JPred. So I don't know. Yeah, just the way they're able to keep themselves motivated and to cover for the loss of these absolutely outstanding players is it's a tribute to the way the entire club operates, and they are very much the model for others to follow. We've discussed Chanatip and the midfield. Then heading back to James Clark, the second question that he wanted us to ponder, Sam, is it's one that we've wondered a few times over the course of this run that Frontale have been on, and it's about the ACL and shifting their focus. I think there was a concerted effort to put more eggs in the ACL basket last year, and obviously they drew the short straw of having to play Ulsan in the knockout stage. Obviously the only two teams in the East Zone who were perfect 6 wins from 6 in their group, and then they had to play against each other in the knockout round, and that was it for Frontale, unfortunately. But Do these signings and does the depth at the club lead you to believe that they might be able to have a concerted run at it? Because I think it's left us scratching our heads, hasn't it? The way that they haven't been able to turn this domestic dominance into a more concerted push into the latter stages of the ACL.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be their priority. I mean, it's the one thing that's really missing from this team is a run in the ACL. They haven't really got anywhere. I think there was one quarter final, wasn't there? But a couple of years ago, but really not to the latter stages. And it's definitely what they'll be aiming for. I think that the centralised groups kind of help teams in that instead of having to have a league game at the weekend, then maybe you've got a trip to Australia in the midweek, and then that's kind of when you might lose focus on the ACL or maybe the league, whichever way it might be. But with these centralised groups, you've got a couple of weeks where the team will just focus on the Champions League, so there's no excuses there. I think they'll get through their group. Obviously, they've been drawn with Ulsan, which at least maybe it's best to get them out of the way in the group stage and try and get in to qualify from one of those top two spots, and maybe the run afterwards is a little bit kinder. But yeah, it's just like last season, it looked like it was going to work out for them. They sailed through that group, but then they drew Ulsan, the most difficult tie they could have got, just as they were losing Mitoma and Tanaka, so it was like their lowest ebb of the season. I think they had quite a few injuries as well, so it didn't really work out for them. But I think there is definitely enough quality in that squad to make a run at the Champions League. I don't think it's a case of having to balance anything as much, because, yeah, it's just in that one-off block for those group games. It might be a little bit more difficult when it comes to the knockout stages, but it's so spread out at this point. I mean, it's way down into the future, these knockout games. The final's not happening until like over a year's time, so it's kind of difficult to gauge into that future. But in the immediate, looking at these groups, I think, yeah, they've got more than enough to have a good concerted run at the ACL.
All right, then. And so before we finish up on Frontale, a couple of final questions from Graham Freche. We'll save the blockbuster for last. His first one is, will Leandro Damião repeat as the top goal scorer, Sam? I guess the ammunition will still be provided for him, so it's a matter of whether he can just kick on and, yeah, even extend himself and, yeah, net more than the 23 he got last year. But for me, he would be the short price favourite at this stage. How about yourself?
Well, he's definitely in the right club if he is going to aim for the top scorer berth. I'm not going to bet against him. I think at this moment, I'd say Yoshinori Muto could be a challenge for him in that Kobe team. If he gets a full season under his belt, I think he might be the one challenging for him. But yeah, the way Damian played last season and the way that I expect Frontale to play, I mean, yeah, it's quite comfortably he should be favourite going into this season.
All right, and Graham Freche wants to know, Sam, and I will read this exactly as he's written it. Will Kawasaki win again? A simple yes or no question.
Yes. What about you?
I concur, yes. At this stage, I can't see anybody else winning it. Sorry, that you just said simple yes or no, Graham Freche. Yes, for me as well. All right, so, yeah, the first four of our clubs are in the books. Now, we did have a couple of questions that I wanted to get to before we finish. And, again, it's a big thanks to everybody who submitted the club-specific questions. But Dan Olowitz and Brian Smith had a question that I wanted to get to as well, Sam. So Dan's is an interesting one, and it's one we might be able to revisit throughout the course of this preseason. Dan wonders, how big of a gap do we think there is, if any, between what each club's supporters expect this season and what they should probably expect? So, again, I guess we want to be careful of, you know, take care of our two guests who have already shared their thoughts on their respective clubs this season. And I think it's fair to say that both were fairly optimistic. I think you were slightly less optimistic than Thomas and myself about FC Tokyo. So I think that probably answers that part of Dan's question. So what do you think a Shonan supporter might be expecting at this stage of preseason for 2022? And for you, is that realistic?
Well, it's an interesting question. I don't know any Shonan supporters personally, so maybe they all think they're going to win the league or get into the ACL. But I do imagine they think maybe lower mid-table is probably what they're aiming for, maybe just a season where they're a little bit more comfortable. So and I think it's a fairly realistic aim with the players that they've brought in. I think they might fall just a bit short of that and still face a relegation battle, but yeah, I don't think they'll be having expectations wildly out of proportion. I mean, you live a bit closer than I do, so what are your thoughts of the feelings that Belmare supporters are having going into this year?
Yeah, I would think that just pure survival has to be at a club this size and at their resources. I don't think any Belmare supporters would be having outlandish expectations of even a top half finish. So I think their expectations are probably very much in line with what they're going to get, and that it's not always going to be pretty. But yes, they will hope that they've got just enough to hang on as they did last season. As for Frontale, well, their supporters expect them to win the league because they almost always do, and they should probably expect that as well, shouldn't they, Sam?
Yeah, I think so. I'd be slightly worried if they're aiming for anything less or expecting anything less. Yeah, I think they'd probably expect Frontale to be challenging for every title that's on offer. I think they've got the squad that's capable of doing that, and that should be the goal. And I mean, obviously a quadruple is not something I'm ever going to predict on anyone, but I think in all four competitions, Frontale should go into those expecting to win them, and they should be very competitive in all of them. And I think if they're not, then it's a slight, failure with the resources and quality that they have.
Yeah, but isn't that absolutely remarkable to say that? And I can't argue with you in the slightest that those four players that they've lost, that we just mentioned before, but yeah, they're still in a position to have those sort of expectations. And yeah, for them to not be pie in the sky, it's absolutely remarkable. And well, we began this episode with Yokohama F. Marinos, and well, yeah, I guess we might as well finish with them as well. So, you know, Stuart is a terrific guy and he loves going to the games, and I don't think anything could really put a dampener on that. But yeah, for me, I don't know if I see them finishing second again, if I'm scratching out my table at the moment, but that doesn't mean I think they'll be markedly worse than they were last year. But yeah, do you think, well, maybe the most optimistic of F. Marino supporters' expectations are slightly pie in the sky at this stage?
Yeah, I think if there is an expectation of being a winning the league, I think that's a little bit out there. I think they can expect maybe to be one of those teams challenging for second place, and I think that's a fairly realistic aim as well. I do think they'll fall a little bit short of that. I think they're a bit weaker than last year, and if you look at the squads that Kobe have got and you look at what Reds have done, I think they may have dropped off a little bit behind them. So yeah, I'd be having them still ACL competitor, I think about fourth, but yeah, I think maybe if you're looking at second or even first, I think that might be a little too optimistic.
Yeah, no, fair enough then. All right, well, thanks, Dan. And an interesting exercise there for us towards the end of the episode. And yeah, I did want to mention Brian's question. It's about whether the J-League has ever considered going to a European-style August to May type schedule. Brian wonders what think Sam would be the advantages and disadvantages of doing that. I guess for a lot of the northern part of Japan, the months around Christmas, especially later on in December and most of January, basically they just get so much snow that it's the conditions are just unplayable. I mean, you see when you look at the opening fixtures for J2 and J3, the teams that are up in the up at the top end of Honshu, some of them aren't able to play their first home games of the season until well into March, because they're just not able to guarantee a safe experience for not only the players, but of course the supporters that are able to attend the game. So if we were to play right through the winter, I mean, that would, and obviously it would have to be a league-wide thing. It wouldn't only be a J1 thing, but I think that would just stretch the resources of the clubs a little bit too much in the lower divisions. And I think, Sam, we need to play through the summer anyway to keep the so rare guys occupied. They obviously, once the European seasons are finished, they look elsewhere for their fantasy football entertainment. So the J-League definitely fills a void in that regard. And while it obviously would be beneficial in terms of organizing major tournaments and the transfer windows aligning, et cetera, I think just logistically it's just not, I don't know if it's ever really going to be workable.
No, I don't think so. And I think it will come, it'll be discussed again, because the AFC are obviously in the process of moving the Champions League dates to fit in with that kind of winter season. They're using this Winter World Cup to help align that. So Japan will be completely the opposite of that. So you would see maybe calls for it. But yeah, unless you're having a 2 or 3 month winter break to allow these northern clubs to play, or if you're forcing them on long road trips just to play a load of away games, which isn't fair either. So yeah, I just don't think it's particularly viable. I would very much like to have a summer holiday and it would really work for me, but yeah, I don't think it's going to happen in the near future or at all, actually.
Yeah, no, fair enough then. All right, well, very much appreciate the question, Brian. And, yeah, hopefully we'll be hearing from you again throughout the rest of the preseason and indeed into the 2022 campaign. Thanks again to Dan and, yes, indeed to Johnny, to James, Chris, Ralph and Graham Freche for their questions as well on this week's episode. So, yeah, that's the end of the first four teams that we needed to preview in our first J1 season preview episode. After a quick hit of music, Sam and I will come back to chat about the national team setup ahead of two huge World Cup qualifiers. And before we go, a check on Hajime Moriyasu's squad for the two huge World Cup qualifiers coming up for Japan in the next week or so. Of course, on Thursday, the 27th versus China, and then Tuesday, the 1st of February versus Saudi Arabia, both at Saitama Stadium. They are huge games for Japan, Sam, and they're going to have to get by without their regular centre-back duo.
Yeah, that's a really big blow, not necessarily for the China game, but definitely for the Saudi Arabia ones. We have no Tomiyasu, no Yoshida. It's a big blow. Now you bring in Itakura, who has done very well, actually, for Schalke, and Taniguchi, who is a reliable centre-back. So I'm sure those two, if they are indeed the partnership, will do okay. But, yeah, to lose two of your best players and the heart of your defence is a difficult one, especially as I still have various concerns with left back and goalkeeper and various other positions in this team. So it's that's a blow, but maybe on the flip side, Kubo back in the squad, that's good. There's lots of options behind the striker as well. But yeah, with those two missing, Furuhashi's injured and Mitoma's injured, so yeah, big losses for Japan to cope with going into two absolutely crucial games.
Most definitely. So, yeah, Takehiro Tomiyasu was named in the initial squad, but then ruled out through injury, and his place in the 23 was taken by Shinosuke Nakatani of Nagoya Grampus. So, some interesting selections. I imagine that Daniel Schmidt won't feature in either of the games, Sam, but he was named as the third keeper. Of course, Eiji Kawashima will be in Japan squads until the end of time, so no surprise to see him in there again. And, it's going to be an interesting choice. Basically, it's presuming that Nakatani won't be first choice, obviously, as he's just been an injury replacement. So it is basically Itakura, Taniguchi and Naomichi Wada fighting it out for the two centre-back spots. I would lean the same way that you have just mentioned there, with Itakura and Taniguchi likely to get the nod. But, Wada does wait in the wings, I suppose. And then, Moriyasu, the slightly puzzling way of setting things out with naming 12 midfielders / forwards, headlined by Yuya Osako, who is of course the regular number 9 for Japan. You mentioned last week you thought there might have been recalls for Yoshinori Muto and or Shoya Nakajima, but neither of those players are in. I guess that's Moriyasu staying true to form there. He hasn't picked them in recent times, so he's decided against it again here. Junior Ito has obviously saved Moriyasu's bacon a couple of times in the last set of internationals. Where else do you see Japan making a difference in these two games? I mean, Maeda, does he come straight in? Does he play on the left of the front three with maybe Kubo off the right, either side of Osako? How do you think he might set them up?
Well, I mean, maybe if I was picking the team, then Maeda might be on the left-hand side, but it's difficult really to look past his usual tried and trusted method of Ito on one side, and he's playing Minamino, hasn't he, off the left-hand side, which isn't his best position, but that's probably the way he goes again, with Kubo just behind Osako. That's where I imagine it. Obviously, Daisen Maeda, I think, on the left-hand side gives a lot of creativity, a lot of options, great pace down there, and is a good finisher. So he would be maybe where I would lean towards. But yeah, this is Moriyasu, so I don't expect too many things. He's already made me look stupid with the Nakajima pick. I don't know, as Portuguese media led me get down the garden path. And yeah, Muto, what I just maybe strangely assumed he might pick more than one out and out striker, but apparently that's not the case either. So yeah, I have slight concerns over the lack of striking options. Like Osako is one that will drop deep, and the other ones that can play there, Maeda is, I think, better wide. I think Asano is better wide. I think Minamino is better deeper. So it just, yeah, a little bit. I have a worry about everything being too centralized, especially if Minamino is out on that left wing. But yeah, I just don't see Moriyasu really straying from what he knows.
All right, and do you think he might go horses for courses? He might unleash the hounds versus China, perhaps, but then it might be a little bit more, well, cautious is his middle name, of course. Do you think he might even plump for three in midfield versus Saudi Arabia and kind of just see how the game kind of pans out before making some more offensive changes, perhaps in the second half if the team needs a goal? Or do you think he'll be pretty stuck in his ways and is likely to pick the same 11 for both games?
Well, I think with Kubo being there, I think you have to try and pick him, especially against China. And I want him in that number 10 role. I do think, as you say, for the Saudi Arabia game, like he did for Australia, go back to that three-man midfield and just try and be a little bit more cautious and look to kind of probe a little bit more. So, yeah, I think there will be slight tweaks, but, I mean, it's not a massive tweak, is it? One central midfielder moving to the number 10 position and vice versa. But, yeah, I don't necessarily think he's going to go all guns blazing against China and then retreat against Saudi Arabia. I think the way that they approach both games will be quite similar, and it'll just be trying to break down China in that first game without really looking too exciting and not having that player like Mitoma or Furuhashi to bring off the bench. So I still think Japan should beat China, but I think it'll be quite a dull process in doing so. And then that Saudi Arabia game is just massive, and you take a win however you get it in that one.
Yes, most definitely. So, yeah, there are two huge games coming up in the next week, as we mentioned, Thursday and then next Tuesday. And we'll be back next week after the Saudi Arabia game to talk about both of the Samurai Blue fixtures and then, of course, to preview our next series of clubs in our J1 team-by-team preview series. All right, so Sam, we will leave it there. Great to get some guests on the board in this week's episode, and a milestone episode, absolutely terrific stuff. Here's to 400 more, eh?
Absolutely. Congratulations again on that milestone, and great blockbuster news with that coming from Thomas and Stuart, so I'm looking forward to listening to those. And thank you to all the patrons for the great questions throughout the episode.
Yes, hear, hear. Well said, Sam. And thanks to you very much, mate. You played a massive part in things over the past, 6 or 7 years. And, absolutely brilliant stuff from you on a week-to-week basis, as the listeners definitely appreciate. All right, so we will leave it there. That is it for this week's episode, the 400th of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would very much like to thank Stuart Woodward and Thomas Pennington for their time on this week's episode. And as always, thanks to our patrons for their ongoing support. Thanks to you, of course, listeners, for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to chat about the Samurai Blues 2 games and then continue our J1 season previews. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.